A Sustainable Mind, Episode 7. This is A Sustainable Mind podcast, where we delve into the minds behind today's most impactful environmental campaigns, organizations, and startups, inspiring the environmental changemakers of tomorrow. I'm your host, Marjorie Alexander. Today, I am very happy to welcome to the show Jay Sinha. Jay is co-owner of Life Without Plastics, which he founded with his wife, Chantal. With a background in biochemistry, ecotoxicology, and law, he is the go-to guy when it comes to plastics. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Marjorie. Glad to be here.
So the name of your company, Life Without Plastic, is pretty self-explanatory, but often people are overwhelmed by terms like zero waste or plastic free because when they think about it in terms of their own lifestyle, they actually get really overwhelmed with what that would mean for them if they lived by those terms. And they might say to themselves, well, I could never live like that. That's way too extreme for me. But what they don't consider are all of the steps and all of the choices that go into leading a lifestyle such as one without plastic. So I want you to take a couple of minutes and give us a brief overview of how sustainability played a part in your life growing up, and then since then, your journey and how you finally did get to a life without plastic.
Sure, yeah. Well, I grew up in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, and I'm the son of a mother who grew up on a farm just outside Winnipeg and a father who was born in India and was a research scientist and worked for the Canadian government. And so I had a relatively, I guess, what would you call it? I guess you could say sort of mainstream, normal upbringing. My parents were very open-minded. And they were environmentally conscious at a time when it was less of an issue, the environment as a whole. But I would not have described them as tree huggers, that's for sure. Not in the way that we, I guess, view tree huggers today, of which I would count myself now. But there was an awareness in the household of certainly conserving energy, for example. My mother, having grown up on a farm, she always had a garden. We made our own yogurt at times. So we went through this phase where my dad was yogurt crazy. And we always had fresh vegetables from my mom's garden. For me, I think the point where the whole environmental issue became really more direct in my life and really took on a new kind of awareness was about grade six. When I did a project on acid rain, which at the time was a big issue in Canada, especially around the Ontario area, where in southern Ontario on the Great Lakes and in the Michigan Detroit area, there were some pretty, and Hamilton, some pretty intense industrial factories at work, the steel industry. So a lot of the toxicity from those those tall smokestacks would go up into the air and create what is known as acid rain. And a lot of it, the way the air flows would go would end up with the rain coming down on Canadian lakes up north and essentially killing them. So that was a big issue. And I did a project on that, and that really opened my eyes to the whole environmental issue. And I thought, well, wow, I had no idea that there are all these lakes that are dying and the fish can't survive. So that was a bit of a wake-up call, or maybe just an eye-opener. And from then on, I was always interested in the environment, but it really took hold again, I would say, in university when I started a Bachelor of Science degree. And at that point was thinking it was a biochemistry specialization or honors. And I thought I would go on and do research, but then as that degree came to an end, I thought more about becoming an environmental consultant and focusing on the environment in some way. And then went into law and thought I would do environmental law. And then when I came out of law, I did work as an environmental consultant for a while. And all through this, I was a tree planter. I was leading a pretty healthy lifestyle. And was always quite aware of the environment and of conserving energy and of minimizing waste, things like that. But I guess it would be a little later on when I was working, after I had finished law, I was working as an environment consultant and then worked for the Canadian government for a while. And Chantal, my partner and I, we had some issues with mold in the home that we were living in. And that opened our eyes to the whole realm of environmental toxins. And we both became quite sick for about a year. And it was also right when our son was born. And that was a real eye-opener because we hadn't thought so much. I had this focus on the exterior environment, but not so much on how the exterior environment, when it is polluted, can affect our bodies, our interior environments, and how what we put into our bodies so much can, even inadvertently, can have a really severe effect on our health. And so that made us think. It all started because the path towards what we do now, life without plastic, it started because we were initially looking for a non-plastic. Well, Chantal had read an article about plastics and how they release certain chemicals that can be harmful to your health. And so we started looking for a non-plastic water bottle, and this would have been back in 2002. And at the time, there just really weren't that many around. Mm-hmm. It may seem like not that long ago, but it's a relatively new thing, non-plastic water bottles. Although if you go back further, they were very common, similarly to baby bottles in glass. So we eventually did find one online, made by a company called Clean Canteen, which is now quite a big company. At the time, it was more of a co-op. So we ordered it and tried it out, and it was great, and didn't think too much about it. Then our son was born, and Chantal was breastfeeding, but we were looking for a way to store milk in a non-plastic container. We didn't want to use plastic baby bottles. So again, we started a search for non-plastic baby bottles, in particular glass, mm-hmm. which were the norm about, well, in the 70s and earlier. But at that time, in the early 2000s, they were difficult to find. We did come across eventually one company, Evenflow in Ohio, that was still making them. So we contacted them, and they were happy to sell us some, but they only did wholesale. So the minimum order was 1,000 bottles. And that kind of got us thinking about, well, there must be others out there who are looking for these sorts of things too, as the issue is if there is research going on about plastics being an issue. Mm-hmm. So that's more or less how the business started. Really with those two products, stainless steel water bottles and glass baby bottles, and then we added on some stainless steel food containers. And Chantal began the business, and at the time I was still working for the government at that time with Environment Canada, the Canadian Department of the Environment. And it grew bit by bit as we found there were more and more people becoming interested in the issue. And then it really took off in around 2007, when bisphenol A, BPA, which most of your listeners will probably have heard of, mm-hmm. became quite a large issue. And Canada was really the first company, the first country to, in a sense, put it on the map by actually designating it a toxic substance, which led to bans of it in baby bottles and formula containers in Canada, and that led to bans in other countries.
So BPA free, like you're mentioning, it's become illegal in some countries, and it's become a pretty big deal here in the States if you're a conscious consumer. Right. Obviously, a lot of people aren't, so they're not going to be kind of scouting the aisles for things that are BPA free. But what I'm confused about, and I'm sure a whole bunch of people are confused about, is why BPA? So what is BPA? Why is it in some things and not others? And then what's the purpose of it? If some plastics have it and some don't, then what is the purpose of BPA? Does it make it cheaper or easier for the companies to produce?
Sure. Okay. Well, bisphenol A, it's the core component in a plastic, which is known as polycarbonate, and in what is an epoxy, which lines, for example, the cans, the interior of cans. Polycarbonate, BPA is really the core component of that plastic. It's been used for a lot of water bottles and still is. You may have seen in the past the Nalgene bottles. They used to be made of BPA. BPA is, it's a hard resin which can be clear and colored. It's very attractive for the bottling industry to be used to make plastic bottles because it is tough, it's strong, and it's clear, but it can still be colored. So you see different shades of it. The problem with BPA is that it is also an endocrine disruptor. It mimics the hormone estrogen, so it can, in fact, disrupt the endocrine system and induce adverse hormonal responses in living beings. And there's been, at this point, now that it's been a number of years that it's been an issue, there's a ton of research that's out there showing all kinds of different effects coming out of BPA. Some of the effects, for example, are permanent changes to the genital tract, increased prostate weight, declines in testosterone, links to various cancers, including breast cancer, prostate cancer, links to hyperactivity, ADHD in children. Mm-hmm. Just this week, we're sending out a newsletter, and one of the features that we're putting in is an episode of a documentary in Canada by David Suzuki called The Nature of Things, which focuses on how endocrine disruptors may now be linked to obesity, and how the linkage is showing that the exposure to endocrine disruptors by the mother of the child in the womb can lead to an increase to a predisposition to obesity later in life when the child becomes an adult.
So this is not something that you can just wash out of your system. I mean, it's there in some form and in some amount forever?
Well, no. Adults can wash it out relatively easily.
Okay.
But those with a lot of hormones coursing through their bodies, no. Like children and pregnant women, it stays in the bodies longer. Even with adults, if you're exposed to it constantly, as we are all over the world now in all societies, because it's in the air, it's in, for example, sales receipt, cash register receipts. The
what?
Ink on them is coated with BPA.
Wow.
So it's a good idea if you do take them. I mean, it's the best is not to take the receipt if you don't need it.
Oh my goodness gracious. Well, I have to tell you, I'm pretty paper free.
Right.
But I am just obsessed with receipts. This is an admission to my audience. I have no idea what my problem is. I think it's like I like having records of everything, you know, and in case one day like I'm framed for some crime, I can have like a receipt that puts me somewhere else at the time of the crime. So
paper trail.
Yeah, I mean, I just collect receipts. I really don't know, but I'm going to stop now. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, running a business, we have to keep some receipts. So I have to take some. Mm-hmm. I try to avoid them when I can. But what I do is to try and not touch the ink side, and then as soon as possible, after wash my hands.
Wow.
To get it off the fingers. But the point is that there is BPA pretty much everywhere, so it's difficult to avoid it. And you see the odd. There's a book called Slow Death by Rubber Duck, and the two authors of that book, their most recent book is called Talks In, Talks Out, and they did some ongoing tests of themselves, their bodies, and the sort of the amount of chemicals that were in their bodies. They did tests sort of before and after using certain things. And there were standard ongoing levels of BPA in them. So even though they were flushing it out by drinking a lot of water and so on, as a normal adult would. So it's difficult to flush it out completely. Although the point is, though, that it does go through the adult system relatively quickly, but not so for a child or a pregnant woman where there's a lot of hormones coursing through the body.
Right. Wow.
But back to the whole BPA-free thing, the issue there is that these replacements, such as for polycarbonate bottles and for the liners of cans, the replacements that are being used are, for one, not labeled. You don't know necessarily what the replacement is. It'll just say BPA-free. Mm-hmm. It's most often another bisphenol chemical, either usually bisphenol F or bisphenol S, Now, the problem here is that both of those have been shown to have estrogenic activity as well, to have hormone disrupting activity. And there's clear research on that, very clear. So at the same level as BPA, in some cases, even more. So it's a ludicrous thing to be saying, oh, yeah, it's BPA free, but it's been replaced with something which is also an endocrine disruptor. Mm-hmm. That's the problem with there not being full disclosure of what exactly these chemicals are and what they can do.
That's amazing.
So, yeah, it is amazing. But the good thing is it's coming out. You know, Mother Jones has done some excellent exposés on this, and the research is ongoing. So it's coming out into the mainstream slowly and surely.
I'm so happy that I have this opportunity to speak with people like you because, you know, I think a lot of people, they want to know what's in their food. They want to know what's in the products that they consume.
Absolutely.
But they don't know where to look.
Absolutely.
And that's one reason that I'm doing a show like this. But also for me personally, you know, I've been having trouble making the transition from a typical consumer lifestyle, although I'm, you know, I pretty much buy food and clothes, and I only buy either when I need it. Like, I'm very minimalistic in my life as it is right now, but it's not plastic free. Mm-hmm. And after you said all of this, I'm going to move even further along because I've been transitioning from plastic to glass in my lunch containers going to work, and I'm trying to make my lunch every day.
Well, you're on the leading edge.
I feel like I'm behind, actually.
Well, if I can make a suggestion to both you and your listeners, there is a woman out there named Beth Terry who writes a blog called My Plastic Free Life. It's myplasticfreelife.com. Mm-hmm. She is a marvel. Since 2007, she has been tracking all of the plastic that she uses and cutting it down as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And she's also written a book called Plastic Free. And she is probably the go-to person in the world on how to take easy, simple steps in everyday life to minimize your use of plastic. She has all kinds of tips on her site. And we have a lot of them on our site too, but we often defer to her because she's just got so much, done so much research and has so many resources that she's tapped on and done research on. So that's a good place to start if you're looking for ways, ideas. And it's, right. I think the important thing also is not to see it as a daunting thing. Just, you know, start with one little thing. Get a reusable water bottle. Get some reusable bags. Mm-hmm. Get a utensil like a spork or fork and knife that you carry with you so you don't have to use plastic utensils. It can be very, very simple to start, and then bit by bit, just add on little things here and there.
Right. And I'll never look at my, you know, my salad in that little innocent seeming plastic container that I get from the grocery store every day.
Right. Yeah. You got to ask. You use it for about 15 minutes, half an hour. And where does it go then? Where does it come from? For one, it was oil or natural gas. And then it's going to go into a garbage can or maybe a recycling bin, and it may or may not be recycled. Most likely not, as most plastics are not. The best plastics that are recovered, it's at about a 30% recycling rate. So much of it goes straight into a landfill, which then may be a landfill in China, maybe a landfill in North America, but regardless, it's a landfill where it sits and does not degrade for hundreds of years.
For people who are more, I don't want to say eco-conscious, but they're kind of already on that track, and they want to make a little bit of a not a bigger difference, but they want to reach outside of themselves. So they've kind of, you know, they've decided for themselves, I'm going to live this more eco-friendly lifestyle, but I also want to spread the knowledge or spread my resources to other people. So mm-hmm. Speaking about your journey building the business Life Without Plastics, what was kind of your most unexpected difficulty in cultivating this earth-conscious business?
Well, there's sort of two things that come to mind. One is the reaction that we would get from certain friends and family who kind of thought of us as strange outliers and not really understanding why we were doing what we were doing. Now they all do very clearly, But at the time when we first started out, it was bizarre to be, well, why wouldn't you want to use plastic? I mean, what's the big deal? And why are you going to all this trouble to have stainless steel containers or not buy things with plastic packaging? And I should point out here, you know, one thing, we are not 100% plastic free by any means. As much as we try to live plastic free, it's very hard, to be 100% plastic free in mainstream, well, even alternative society, which I'd say we live in a rural area and we're very conscious, but there are certain things, certain ways that we, still do use plastic. One example, just to give you a concrete example, is we still buy cheese, it is in the plastic. We remove it and put it in a non-plastic container, but it's hard where we're living to get, you know, a big wheel of cheese and cut it up and keep it for a long time, which is one of the things, for example, that Beth Terry suggests doing. Mm-hmm. But in terms of core challenges, so that was one, points the attitude of people around us. Another one was initially finding alternatives. What we did was initially we focused on food and drink. We wanted to try and minimize the plastic that's coming into contact with our food and drink. So we focused on food containers. So water bottles, stainless steel glass containers, bags or wraps to avoid using, for example, plastic, things like saran wrap, that sort of thing. One of the challenges has been focus on products that are hard to find in a non-plastic form. And it's sometimes hard to find alternatives in a non-plastic form to certain things. And in this way, we've had to create them ourselves. One example, I'll give you a couple examples, is the ice cube tray. They're very often plastic. But if you go back, and this is another interesting thing that it's been an interesting journey with the business. If you go back in time, and a number of our products do go back in time, when plastic wasn't around or when there were just other ways of doing it. For example, the ice cube trays, they used to be made out of aluminum with a lever handle, and you can still buy them on eBay.
Oh, so that's right. I forgot my mother about
had
that.
One. Yeah. And growing up in Winnipeg, my mother had one. It was made out of aluminum, which is not great. aluminum can be toxic, but...
Wait a second. So... I hate to stop you.
Sure.
But so aluminum can be toxic. So when people are buying these, you know, because an alternative to glass is aluminum. And I guess that's for weight purposes. I'm not really sure. Maybe it's more stackable or something like that. But are aluminums that we use these days toxic as well?
Well, we don't recommend using aluminum in direct contact with food or drink at all. Just because it is linked to nervous system disorders. There are some products you can buy, for example, water bottles, which are aluminum, but coated with something to prevent direct contact with the aluminum. But, we don't carry aluminum product. We do have one, it's an old, miner's style, lunch box, the old original style lunch boxes that were made out of aluminum.
Yeah.
But they don't come into direct, they're not supposed to come into direct contact with the food itself in a, but we focus on stainless steel or glass or wood. And so the ice cube tray that we developed, it's made out of stainless steel. And another example of finding an alternative product, which just didn't seem to be out there and going to create it was popsicle molds. Which, again, are very often plastic or more silicone as well. But, we created ones that are made out of stainless steel as well with bamboo sticks, and they work quite well. So it's a mix. Like that's part of one of the funnest parts of the business is looking for new products and finding new products. And they're more and more coming out as people get more creative and look for alternatives themselves and do their own research. But we also find it fun to create a few things ourselves when we can't find an alternative.
What is your most exciting product that you're working on right now? And I think I read somewhere that Chantal, your wife, is like a trademark lawyer? Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. She has a background in trademark law. Right now we have a couple of food containers that we're working on with, a really neat, company that we work with in India, airtight food containers. There's also a little travel kit that we're putting together that we plan to launch this fall, which will have, it'll essentially be a fabric bag with a few different items in it. It'll vary, but it could be a razor, a soap box, a toothbrush, to make it easy for traveling, plastic free. So the core things we're working on right now, that I can mention.
I'm sure you guys are working on a few patents, so I don't want to dig too deep.
Oh, that's okay. That is definitely one of the fun parts of the business is the product development and looking for new products. And we look all over the place. We get a lot of suggestions from our clients as well, who may be looking for something and can't find it. We love our client base, just amazing people that we come into contact with who are really, like you, going to huge efforts to change their life and become more plastic free. And, you know, one thing I'd love to mention is it can be really easy to go plastic free in a big way by using one item that pretty much everyone's going to have in their house or can easily obtain, and that is a mason jar. It's one of the most amazing inventions. You can use it for all kinds of things. It can be a water bottle. You can use it for storing foods in bulk. You can store things in the freezer. You can store leftovers. You can use them for lunches. It's incredible when you start looking around you how you can repurpose something for a new purpose. And the mason jar is one of the best out there, we find.
Awesome. And do you offer mason jars on lifewithoutplastics.com?
We don't, because they're so easy to find. You can find them pretty much anywhere. And like if you, for example, get a jar of spaghetti sauce, something, you can just keep the jar and use it. Mm-hmm. We offer specialized canning jars by a company called Weck, which are very nice old world German made canning jars. But the typical mason jar, those have glass tops. The mason jars, we don't supply them just because they are so easy to find.
So you've provided several resources, books, movies, people for me to chase down to interview. So the book Plastic Free by Beth Terry, Toxin Talks Out, Slow Death, and The Nature of Things by David Suzuki.
It's actually, the film is that the particular one is called Programmed to Be Fat.
Okay.
It's an episode of The Nature of Things. But yes.
Gotcha. So, Jay, this is what I like to call the lightning round, and it's where I'll ask you a series of questions, and you can just take, 30 to 60 seconds each to answer. Was there anything that was holding you back from putting this project or this business into motion?
Yes, our jobs. We were both at the time working for the Canadian government and in very secure, stable jobs, and starting a business is a risky thing. And we both came from non-entrepreneurial backgrounds with families that had grown up in, very stable, middle-class, suburban, solid income families. And so we jumped into the business, and it's a tough lifestyle, especially at the beginning, ups and downs. And it's 24 hour too. You eat, sleep, and live the business at times, especially at the beginnings. So it's an all-encompassing commitment, and it was hard, and no regrets. Although, I have to say, looking back, if we were to do it again, I think we would do it, but we'd certainly do certain things differently. We've learned so much along the way.
What relationships? This is an earth-conscious business. What relationships have you cultivated over time that have helped kind of propel this business forward that are specific to running an eco-friendly business?
Okay, well, we have some amazing partners. I've mentioned Beth Terry. Mm-hmm. There's also the Plastic Pollution Coalition, which is based out of Los Angeles. It's an amazing umbrella organization of groups, businesses, individuals, celebrities who are interested in the plastic pollution issue and provide a lot of information, do a lot of outreach and advocacy. We're a solid partner of theirs and member at the core one. Another is the Algalita Marine Research and Education, and the Five Gyres Institute, both of which focus on the problem of ocean plastic pollution. Captain Charles Moore founded Algalita, and Anna Cummins and Marcus Erickson founded Five Gyres Institute. And both these organizations are doing the most cutting-edge research on ocean plastic pollution. They do trawls out in the oceans to determine the levels of plastic in the oceans. And, for example, Five Gyres has spearheaded a campaign most recently about microbeads, which you may have heard of.
Yes.
Which are tiny pieces of plastic used in personal care products such as facial cleansers, shampoos, even toothpaste. They've spearheaded this campaign and been extremely successful in beginning to get microbeads banned from or taken out of certain products. They're used because they have abrasive qualities. So the idea is the plastic helps to fluff off dead skin on the skin as it's being used, or in the mouth. This is most bizarre, to, I guess, help remove grit and grime on the teeth.
Stick some plastic in your mouth.
Yeah, but the most bizarre thing about microbeads is that it is a product that is designed to be washed down the drain. It's designed to pollute the environment because it's washed down the drain, and then the microbeads then are way too small to be caught by municipal waste treatment facilities, so they go out into the environment. Mm-hmm. And like, they're less than a millimeter in size, but they're used, the purpose is as an abrasive exfoliant. But the irony is that they're not even necessary, because there are other abrasives out there which are natural, which are even more effective, which could be used. Things like sea salt, coconut husks, apricot shells, crushed cocoa beans.
I use baking soda, and I find that I think I used to basically kind of mix up my own toothpaste beforehand and use that over the course of a few days. But now I actually just use it dry, because it does have that abrasive kind of effect.
Right.
You know, so that actually works really well.
Yeah. Yeah. Even coffee grounds are another one, not so much for toothpaste, but for abrasive qualities. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of options out there. There's another blogger that we work with, Lauren Singer. She has a blog called Trash is for Tossers.
Yes.
And her whole focus, she lives zero waste as much as possible. And her whole focus is creating, she started a little company called the Simply Company, Simply Co. And where she'll be selling products that are very minimal ingredients, completely natural, to replace things like that. For example, toothpaste, and soap, very easy for anyone to make.
Can you share with us one of your long-standing habits that you believe has drastically improved your life? I mean, obviously going plastic-free or nearly plastic-free as much as one can, but aside from plastics, what other long-standing habits have you cultivated?
Sure. Well, two come to mind immediately. One is eating healthy. That's absolutely core. We eat as much as possible organic. And I do believe that what you put into your body becomes you. So, I mean, I don't want to be putting Fruit Loops into my body when I look at the ingredients list. It's just, and the thing is, you can, as you eat well, your body becomes more sensitive. You see this especially, I'm not completely raw vegan, although tend towards that direction. But I know friends I have who are, for example, completely raw and completely vegan. Their bodies are so sensitive now that when they do eat something which, say, is a process, they see an effect immediately, a drain in energy. And I do too when I eat a strong sugar product that's processed. So that's key. Diet, I think, is so important for health in general, but just for healthy living, for clarity of mind, for energy, for decreasing stress, for sleeping better. That's core. The other one is exercise. Keeping active, doing something on a regular basis every day. Again, almost for the same reasons as eating well. It's for energy, for healthy living, for sleeping better, for decreasing stress. I know, like, running a business, it's stressful at times. You know, we have stuff happens and you got to deal with it. And I find every time when there's a really stressful moment, we're in the middle of something, if I stop and go for a run or go for a swim, come back and I feel completely different, just fresh, you know. It just gets the endorphins going in the body and refreshes your mind and body.
And what is one new habit that you're cultivating in your life right now?
Oh, yeah, which one? I have issues with time management. I get easily distracted. You know, there's like so much going on in the world right now. Social media, there's just so much information out there. And so much of it is like really cool stuff that's going on with technology, with food, with the environment, with children, all these things come to mind. We have a child, and so I'm interested in child development, child nutrition, all kinds of things. So a core thing I've been trying to do, and Chantal, it's the same thing. We both get distracted easily. We're trying to be more focused, trying to manage our time better. And for me, one of the things that's made a big difference is having a morning ritual. And I'm actually doing a whole project, a separate project on this about morning rituals, because it's made such a difference in my life. And that is basically a core set of activities you do first thing when you wake up in the morning, and that set the tone for your day, build a really solid foundation. I can't necessarily do it every day. It depends what's going on, if traveling or if just really busy, can't always do everything. But there are core things they do. Just simple things like when I wake up, I always have a glass of water right away. I do Qigong. That's very helpful for relaxing, for setting the tone. Then I usually have a glass of warm water with lemon. Mm-hmm. And then try and do something creative or mindfully uplifting. Maybe read something that has a very positive spin on it, or go for a walk, spend some time with our son, with Chantal, just, you know, starting the day calmly without, I should add, a screen, without electronic stuff right away, taking a break on that. Sometimes it's not possible when we're got urgent stuff on the go, but it helps a lot to ground from the start and sets the tone for the day.
Excellent. Well, speaking of kids, if your younger self had access to a time machine, I know this is a little odd, but if the young Jay, you know, like 18, could travel to the present to speak with you, what would he say or ask you?
Well, it's funny, you know, because I still feel like I'm 18, although I'm sure not. I always use 18 as a barometer, but 18-year-old Jay could go into the future.
It's like, come on, help me out, you know? Was there anything that you kind of struggled with back then that you're looking at now and thinking, oh, if I only knew back then what I know now, it would have been so simple?
Well, I think a core thing is to really focus on where your passions lie. I don't have any regrets about my path, but there are certain things I would have done earlier, like maybe focusing less on a traditional education and more on, I love to write, is perhaps having focused more on writing initially as opposed to all the education, which was great and I feel very blessed to have had it. But I think, yeah, following my passions a little more rather than feeling pressure from the outside, from society and family to take a certain path. That's what most comes to mind right now.
What is one purchase you've made in the last 6 months for less than $100 that has made a dramatic impact in your life?
Good question. I'm looking around right now. I really don't buy much stuff.
Yeah, I figured.
it's really, frankly, I mean, some of the new products that we have. I got a new Clean Canteen bottle recently, but which is very cool. It's an insulated one that I love. But one thing that's come to mind. I actually haven't received it yet, but it's an iPhone case for my iPhone because I have a leather one, which is really worn out. And it's an iPhone case that is made completely out of waste straw fiber, which it hasn't actually arrived yet, but I'm quite excited to see that. It looks like a plastic. It's a bioplastic, essentially, but it is completely natural. So I'm curious about that.
That's kind of cool. What's the company, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm just trying to think. Pella. P-E-L-A.
Cool. I think people will be very interested in that. I just really want to see what it looks like because
I do too. It looks pretty cool, but I'm curious to try it out.
Do you have an internet resource that you can share with our listeners in addition to all of the wonderful stuff that you've mentioned already, but something that is specific to the internet?
Okay. Sure. Yeah. Like I mentioned all those organizations, Plastic Pollution Coalition, Five Gyres Institute, Algalita Research and Education, Beth Terry's My Plastic Free Life. Then also I would add to that the Environmental Working Group, amazing resource for anything, all kinds of things. But if you have any questions about any particular chemical, they have a great database and resource center on what chemicals are safe, which are not. Mm-hmm. Another one is the Surf Rider Foundation. They have a lot of information on plastics as well. The Green America. This is also a partner of ours that we've worked with them that has helped us. You asked the previous question about organizations we've come into contact that have helped us. And Green America, it's an organization for businesses and NGOs, which focuses on the environment and socially responsible business. And they do all kinds of things. They do advocacy work. They certify businesses, have a certification process for how green a particular business is. But they also have a lot of information on their site about green living and things that people can do to take action on environmental issues. So that's another resource.
And what is a book that you can recommend for sustainable minds out there that are hoping to shift their mindset specifically to become the change that they want to see in the world?
Oh, there are so many. One that had a big influence on me is there's a whole body of work there, but the writings of Paul Hawken. Mm-hmm. For example, Natural Capitalism is one of his seminal works, but he has many. If you just Google Paul Hawken, it'll all come up. Another is Eco Mind by Francis Moore Lapey. There's also, for example, The Story of Stuff.
Yes. You know,
Annie Leonard, huge. Mm-hmm. Toxic Free by a woman named Deborah Lynn Dadd. She also has a great website with tons of information on living toxin free. It's Deborah Lynn Dadd, D-A-D-D.
You are just a walking encyclopedia of amazing resources for all types of stuff. I mean, you could go on forever. Okay. I've got so many resources, things I've never heard of. And I admittedly spend, anywhere from 1 to 7 or 8 hours a day just researching this stuff. So the fact that I haven't heard of half of these things is amazing because it gives me new things to look for.
Great. Well, I mentioned Beth Terry, her book Plastic Free, and there's also another one, sort of a core book on plastics that's called Plastic, A Toxic Love Story by Susan Frankel.
Okay.
And that's another great one.
That is definitely a good start. So do you have any final words or parting pieces of guidance to give sustainable minds out there?
Yeah, well, I think it's important to not be overwhelmed by environmental issues, but to embrace them. And in the most simple ways, like try and find time to get out into nature and just get away from the craziness of everyday life. So then you get a sense for how important nature is for our well-being. And with that feeling, you can use it to make small changes that inspire you and really help the world. And very small things can add up to make a big difference. I always say, start with one thing, like, I don't know, change your toothbrush. Get a non-plastic water bottle. I pledged to never take another plastic straw in a restaurant. Mm-hmm. That's a big one. Straws are gross. There's just so many of them, and they're used for like minutes often.
Mm-hmm. And they just give them to you. I never use straws at restaurants just because I don't. I mean, I like to gulp, not sip, I guess. Yeah, but, right. You know, they give them to you anyway. And I'm just like, gosh, you know. And then when they're left on the table, if they're unused, they throw them away. Just like napkins or ketchup packets.
Exactly. And now there are great options for glass straws, like by Glass Dharma and Simply Straws. Mm-hmm. These are two companies that make fantastic glass straws. You can just carry one with you. And they're really quite indestructible, even though it's glass. They have lifetime guarantees.
So where can we find you and your business online?
Okay, well, we are located at in the cyber world at lifewithoutplastic.com. And that's really the best place to find us. We have resources there. We're just in the process of redoing our website, so it's going to look different in the next few months, but tons of information there. And we're constantly bringing new products and always looking for ideas. So if you have any ideas, feel free to drop us a line at info@lifewithoutplastic.com and let us know what you'd like to see, and we'll certainly consider it. Now, of course, if you have suggestions where to find it, too, always welcome.
And I'm looking at these your popsicle molds on your Instagram, which is Life Without Plastic on Instagram, and are super cool. Yeah, I'm gonna have to look into those.
Thanks. Yeah, we have all our social media channels, of course, like on Twitter and Facebook. We're very involved, and we also have a newsletter we put out about every 2 weeks to a month with information on plastics issues, new plastic products, specials, discounts, advocacy, actions people can take. And there's a sign-up form on our website if anyone's interested in being on that list. And we obviously don't share those emails in any public way at all.
Well, thank you so much, Jay, for coming on this call with me. I really appreciate it. You've provided me with so much information and mentioned several things that I had no idea were even issues. So I've added many things to my research queue that I'll be looking into for the next several weeks. So I really appreciate that. Thank you just so much for providing all this wonderful information to our listeners.
Well, it's my deep pleasure. Thank you for doing this and for getting the word out there. It's a real honor for me to be able to share this information, because there's a lot people can easily learn. And what we're finding is more and more people are doing their own research and just need a little direction on where to look. So thank you for providing this forum.
You've been listening to A Sustainable Mind podcast. To hear more interviews just like this one, please subscribe on iTunes or visit asustainablemind.com. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.